Off the ball.
Rugby.
Did he need minutes? He's come back.
Played the last two games. He played a long shift from Bayern. He did not need minutes. And this is not being wise after the event. I didn't want to tempt fate when the team was landed on Friday. I saw the preview. And then I remember looking at the first couple of... Why is he... The bloody all-weather pitches. Part of me hates them.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Hurling Pod
on Off the Ball
with Apple Green, making every journey better.
Many of you were concerned. I think the most messages I got in the last week just gone by were people just asking, are you not coming back? Why didn't you talk after the first round of the league? Where are you now? Went on the radio with Murph during the week to explain. His new arrival was a big part of why we didn't do a pod last weekend. Scale might well have an announcement in a few minutes' time to make too. So that was the explanation as to why we didn't do anything on weekend one. But the Hurling Pod is back, and we've got a new sponsor for this year. It's Apple Green, helping you relax, recharge, and enjoy the journey ahead. It's been a decent second weekend of the Hurling League. The reigning league champions, Cork, came back to see off Galway at Salt Hill. But Ben O'Connor, he wants fewer cards this February, as he feels lawmakers are trying to cleanse hurling. John Kiley says Limerick just weren't at it in the game against Waterford today. That's sedacious. His first win over the treaty in 5 years. Jason Ford was on fire, 3-10 for him, as Tipperary put Offaly to the sword in Tullamore. And Clare made it 2-2 in Division 1B, continuing their dominance over Davy up in Antrim. So, naturally enough, we had to bring the band back together. James Skell, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, folks. Good to be back. How are we going?
Paul Murphy, who is now Papa Paul Murphy at this stage. How are you, Murph?
I'm great, Will. Thanks. I didn't realise you were going to throw my son under the bus so early that he was the reason we didn't do the pod last week. Poor devil. He's only 6 days old and you're throwing him under the bus.
In about 5 or 6 years' time, when he's old enough to consume podcasts, he's going to be like, so this is why Dad didn't do a January podcast for season 5.
Yeah. This is why we were delayed 1 week. Jesus.
Jeez, Murph, it's hard to piece that together now at the minute. This is why Dad...
I know,
Wow. I won't go off on a tangent too much, right? But how much of a fright did you get when the first poop came out?
I didn't find it too bad. Now,
shocked me the first time I saw that poop.
Yeah, it's mad. That is mad. But like, it's not. No. It's kind of like one of these. I don't know. I don't want to get too graphic with it now, but it's like you had 6 pints of Guinness or something before at some stage along the way. Yeah. It's very black. But I didn't find it too bad. I found the horror stories a lot worse. Lads were saying this and that. I didn't find it as bad now, to be honest. But I don't know. Maybe.
So I said to Murph during the week, Skell, are you going to take parenting advice from Skell along the way? And he said, this guy's got a lot of experience. Maybe he's the guy that I'll actually lean on from time to time. I didn't expect the composition of young Tom Murphy's first poo would be the first piece of parenting advice or questioning you would give.
I'm thinking back to my own time when I had my first daughter. 7 years ago now, and then when she did the first poo, this is an awful thing to say about a lady. I didn't know what was coming out, and then Grace goes, "This is perfectly fine. I said, this can't be right. Her insides are backwards. Call the doctor. This isn't right." So it's very different though. I have 3 girls. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a boy, so I'm a soft touch when it comes to the girls.
Yeah,
very soft touch. So how I am on the podcast versus how I am with the girls is way different.
Way different. We've slowly but surely morphed into the Dadcast, which is what we didn't really expect to do. So Murph, before we go towards the hurling, how have the first, I guess, few days, first week of being a dad been for you?
Good, yeah. Sure, you're just adjusting like as you go. I'm not as bad actually adjusting to the sleep thing. I thought I'd be absolutely all over the place, but no, we're getting on great now, to be honest. Early days. I'm not getting ahead of myself yet. I'm sure Skell would tell me a few war stories about being up all night, etc. But no, look, it's great. Just taking it as we go and kind of figuring it out after that. But no, it's mighty.
So Skell was power washing earlier on. Do you want to explain, Skell, why you're having to get the power washing in now?
Yeah, it's called I've got a psychotic wife. who was also June. She's June, our son. Which is our fourth. And when I say that to people, they're like, four? I'm like, yeah, that's not. Like, back in the day, it was 10, 11. You know, four. But she, like, she starts, Murph, you can attest to this as well. Nesting is real. Okay, nesting is real.
It's a very real thing. Very real. Yeah.
Grace is due any moment, right? So she started nesting about a week ago. So inside was everything's fine. You know, standard stuff. Mop the floors, clean the walls. Grand. She says to me, will you power wash the foot pads? I said, right, okay. I said, the baby's going walking out the door.
Yeah.
And then as I'm doing the footpaths, she comes out today and says, the chimney needs to go too. Like, I'll wash the chimney. I'm hungry, so I'll just get my magic 60-foot ladder and get up there. It's deadly serious. The chimney has to be done.
And did it get done?
I think she wants me dead. I think she wants me to fall. She wants the insurance money.
Do you not get a chimney sweep in to do the chimney? I mean, you wouldn't be power washing the chimney anyway.
They only do the inside. I wouldn't say they do the outside.
It's very straight, Les, right? The chimney is aesthetic only. We don't have an actual liner. This is just the outside wall. She wants the outside wall power washed.
Right.
Right, okay. Right,
which makes... The only living creatures that look at the chimney are the birds. That's it, okay? I have never looked at the chimney up to this point. So, yeah, it's just for an easy life. I just have to figure that out tomorrow. I'm going to do the chimney.
Well, that's fair enough. I mean, it took you 6 minutes to call your good lady wife psychotic on this season. So, you know, you've got a bit of making up to do. Or maybe you've already done it by doing the power washing. I'm not sure.
I was going to say something. I won't say that.
You may as well start as you mean to go on.
We are 6 minutes into the podcast. Can we just start in a very kind of refined manner, easy tone? I don't want to get in trouble the first day. I don't want to piss anybody off, especially the wife. I might piss off a few car people or tip people, but just not the wife. I don't need that. I can handle people coming at me on Twitter, but I just can't handle the lady down the hall. So, can we move topic, Will, please?
Well, I have no doubt you're going to piss a lot of people off along the way. Again, for anyone who didn't hear the radio, Murph, Captain Dane's 4-2 a Leinster success. Again, it kind of all goes full circle. We talk about him becoming a dad. It's a cup that was named after your own dad, Tommy, as well, Murph. Emotional moment for you. And also, I would say, a fantastic emotional year for Dane's 4 to be back up to senior hurling as well.
Yeah, it was savage. Look, I suppose the story in Kilkenny Intermediate Hurling was, you know, James Stevens coming down last year. Like they're a savage team. We're hotly tipped and rightfully so favourites to go back up. And we just got a good run going, played a lot of good teams along the way. Played them in league final. They bet us by, I think, 7 or 9 points in the league final. And then turned it around a couple of weeks later and we won by 7 in the county final. So it was huge. Like, I think for our lads, particularly like our... Let's say the older generations of our club, for our main team to beat James Stevens' main team, that was a huge thing. And then the younger lads then as well, like, you know, our younger players were playing Ryan A against James Stevens this year, were beaten in the league final, and then were beaten in the Ryan A semi-final against them. So just getting over the line against them. And like, look, it was a county final. We were heavily underdogs going into it, but it was a great match. It's just kind of one of those ones where it's like, you know, if you lost the match, you'd still be able to hang your coat on it because we played really well. But it was just the fact that we got over the line. I think it was kind of a glass ceiling moment, like shattering a glass ceiling for a lot of people to go like, geez, you could, you know, it was just a brilliant day. It was brilliant. And then we kind of just kept the momentum going after that.
Richie Hogan coming out of retirement. Is he gone back into retirement or how does this work?
Fuck no, as well. I don't know. first wear of the pod. I don't know, to be honest. I would be inclined to say that he probably will hurl this year. Like I was saying this year that, or sorry, last year that he wasn't going to be hurling, and I was telling lads and more than yourselves, no, he won't be hurling. He was telling me he wouldn't be hurling. And then just, he got a good run without an injury to the back and said, I think kind of missed the field as well. Missed being down in the hurling field, missed being around the training field. So what if you weren't maybe going to be playing, but at least be around the field with the lads? I think he kind of realized that that's the main thing about kind of playing hurling or playing GA or whatever. It's being around the dressing room. That's the most enjoyment. So I'd be inclined to say he'll come back in his own time again this year and see what he can do. Like, you know, I don't think he's expecting to come back and be centre forward and on the frees, but maybe he'll get a good run without an injury and maybe he'll be, you know, corner forward or maybe he'll come off the bench. But I think the plan is at the moment, yeah, that he'll give it another rattle and just see how it goes.
Was he around the camp a little bit or was everyone as surprised when he turns up on the team sheet as the rest of us were?
Oh, completely, yeah. I think I told you during the week, for anyone who missed it, that he just walked into the dressing room one of the days. And I think a few of the younger lads thought we knew something that we didn't. But no, I think he'd quietly been speaking over a couple of weeks, maybe just to the management had mentioned it to him and stuff and like that. Like, we'd had lads, no more than any other team. And I think, Skell, you'd even see it now, like maybe last year, like when he had a longer run, like, you mightn't have lads involved at the start of the year because they're travelling or they're working or they're away or whatever. But like, it's not like an inter-county setup. The door's open, like, you know, for lads to come back. So we had lads in America, we had lads travelling in Australia, and they came back around, you know, maybe September, October, November, different times. So each time we had a new, maybe one addition to the dressing room every couple of weeks. But when Richie came back, obviously he drew attention. But no, he just walked into the dressing room one morning. His wife didn't even know he was going to train. Paddy, I was sitting beside Paddy in the dressing room. Paddy Hogan didn't know he was coming up training. So he just came in and just joined in and said nothing and got on with it. So that was really it. There wasn't much of a fuss about it, to be honest.
Let me give you a chance for you to shoot from the hip straight away, Scale, just a few minutes into the podcast. Before we talk about this week, right, I was really surprised to see Henry Shefflin on the Sunday game last week. And the main reason I was really surprised to see him is because he's the Kilkenny under-20 manager. Obviously, he ends up talking about the Kilkenny seniors, and he talks about the fact that he feels that Richie Reid is hard done by the fact that he's not starting at six. Does it not seem a little bit crazy that the under-20 manager, who's probably working in conjunction with the senior manager, is criticising Derek Ling, the senior manager, a former teammate of his, for his selection decisions?
I think because it is kind of crazy for me, and I think it was anybody else nationally, you know, in any other position like that, they get flagged for it. But because he holds such a great standing in the sport, it's hard to, you know, go at him or criticize his opinions to a large degree. But I would think that it'd be quite a conflicting attitude to have. You know, grant having it in-house or indoors and say what you want, you know, behind closed doors with the senior manager, make your thoughts known if you're brave enough to say it nationally, online. That's a brave man. But he must feel extremely passionate about it if he's going to say it nationally. You know, and I've been sort of critical too of Richie in the past in terms of him playing at six. And I would have asked Murphy, you know, a number of times, is he the set six for E, right? And in fairness to Murphy, you've always batted me back and said, yeah, pretty much, yeah. So I don't know what Henry's agenda is, if there is one. Maybe it's just him talking as a clubmate or clubman to clubman. But yeah, I agree with you. It's kind of conflicting information. I thought that would be just kept indoors.
I think he's perfectly entitled to his opinion, first of all. But this is my only thought is, could you imagine when Eddie Brennan was doing media back in the day, right? And he kind of stepped away when he was the Kilkenny under-20 boss. But imagine if he had still been Kilkenny under-20 manager and he was criticising Cody. Cody, wouldn't there?
No, but that's different. Sorry to interrupt you now, Paul. That's just different now. We're talking about two teammates here.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about teammates that soldiered with each other on the pitch for a long time. You know what I mean? In fairness.
Yeah.
Probably the best part of 12, 13 years, I'd say, Murph, at a guess.
Oh, Andy, I'd say so, yeah.
It's way different, you know, having Eddie and Cody in one bracket and then having, you know, Shefflin in the bracket.
I just thought it was very early doors to be saying it harsh. Like, again, I didn't actually watch this on the game, but, you know, I think we were slightly occupied. Yeah. But, you know, basically the crux of what Henry was saying is that it was harsh on Richie Reid. But, like, what I was saying to you during the week, Will, is that, you know, there's loads of players that are... Paddy Deegan was on the bench. Like, it's not a case that, like, Richie Reid and Paddy Deegan are not in contention for championship positions. If this was the first round of the championship, I'm saying, okay, yeah, Henry can, you know, make that point. It's first round of the league. Like, was Mike Casey hard done by not starting for Limerick at the weekend when we know Mike Casey probably start? Was Tommy Monaghan hard done by for Galway not start? Well, he wasn't meant to start, but then came on or started in place of an injured player. You know, there's plenty of lads around the country that... Managers at the moment are kind of having a strong enough, I suppose, a core set of players who are starting it mixed with those players you hope to get a look at within the league and their new players and et cetera, et cetera. I just thought it was a bit strange that he came out so early and said that Richie Reid has been hard done by. I think Derek Ling fully considers playing Richie Reid in half-back line come championship. So I just thought it was a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. And the thing was, it was like Darragh Corcoran was playing there. So it's another Ballyhale man. Not that it's saying it's a Ballyhale thing here, Anton, but I just thought it was a needless kind of a start to a league campaign to maybe point that out. Because I don't think it was hard done by.
I'll take issue with what you said there. I don't know the Ballyhale thing. I think it is a Ballyhale thing.
It could be.
I don't think he says that about Paddy Deegan. Do you know what I mean?
No, he wouldn't.
I don't think he was going on about Paddy Deegan with Murphy being in place. Not the other Murphy. Is it Shane Murphy? Was he at seven?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think he mentioned Paddy Deegan, but. Him being Richie Reid being so pivotal, you could say, for Ballyhale, I think that's where Shefflin gets the emotion out of it, to be fair. But if that was a different club person, I doubt he'd mention it, to be fair.
Yeah. The thing is, I think Richie Reid will start come championship anyway, because he's just in great form. He looks after himself really well. And I was saying to Will during the week, Scale, that, like, you know, last year for me, when you were asking these questions, we're having these debates, you know, against Tipperary, Richie Reid didn't play. Kilkenny didn't play well against Tipperary in the league. The following week, they played Limerick and beat Limerick in Nolan Park. But Richie Reid was at centre-back and he actually played really well. And it was only kind of then people were going, okay, he just, like Declan Hannan, he's not going to go out there and do anything crazy during the game, but he just manages it really well, moves around. And I think you saw the value of him there. So for me, I just think, yeah, he's going to be playing anyway. And I think Darragh Corcoran's in with a great shout as well, because he's playing really well for Ballyhale. So I thought maybe it was a needless distraction for Darragh Corcoran also and Richie Reid. Like, I think the two boys understand what's happening, and I don't think they're under any great impression that, you know, this is a definitive half-back line at the moment. So, we'll see what happens with it.
I think you're right. I kind of changed my tack a little bit, because I think the only place you can play Richie Reid in today's game is actually at six. I think it suits him. I think it suits his style of play and the way he roams around the pitch and his ball playing abilities. I couldn't see him at 5 or 7 anymore, Mark, just simply because of the aerial situation. Coming across, having to contest ball. I think he's more of a break merchant, getting on the breaks, being an out ball for half back line, for a goalie, you know, and for the full back line. So I think that's the best place for him. So I've changed my tactic a little bit. I would say if he's going to be playing, it would have to be at 6. So I can see a degree of Shefflin's point, but just again the way he went about it, like, I just think it lacks a little bit of, it goes against the way Kilkenny do the business, you know. Kilkenny would have always done the business quietly. I would say so. It just goes against it, especially when he's occupying a big position in the county.
Yeah, where he's training players that are going to go on to senior panels straight away.
Keep the fucking spoon turning there, Will. Keep the thing moving. All focus on Kilkenny.
Oh, I look how he's forced me now onto Galway 121, Cork 220 from Saturday night. So this is the game on the TV. Brian Hayes again banging in a couple of goals. It was a comeback win from Cork, but Cork actually a pretty strong team out. So 9 of last year's All-Ireland team had started. Hayes comes off the bench and scores 2 goals during it. Galway were in a pretty good position in this one as well, Skell. They were 1-7 to 3 points up, had hit 7 wides inside the first 15 minutes. And at that stage, it looked like Galway were going to win. So what went wrong from there?
It's interesting when I do notes, Will, on the phone, I said, writing them as I'm watching the match and then recording, you can see my notes are very good at the start and then they just start to go south and they just turn into a disgruntled supporter straight away. But I will start by saying, the last game that we were, like, I know we had Tipperary in the league last year, but we have to consider where the team came from. We had Tipperary last week, but we have to consider where the team came from last year. And Tip beat us in the championship by 8 or 9 points. Joe Dunrick, and that was kind of an 8 or 9 point hammering in the manner in which we got defeated. So something had to change in terms of personnel. Excuse me. And so to see some of the younger players being brought in, and the first 2 games are against the All-Ireland finalists. So I can't be too judgmental, because we're after introducing players who've never featured in league at all, never mind championship. So when you see Darren Eary, Aaron Ireland, and Jason Rabbit, 3 forwards, you're like, okay, this is the makings of something. And the most impressive player would have probably the least reputation under it is Darren Eary, and he's got an engine. So when I start off, I was looking at the pitch and Galway was obviously heavy for both teams, obviously. But I thought defensive shape was good. I thought our half-forward line were doing really well in the first 26 minutes. And the one situation you might remember in the first half, do you remember Rob Downey is being tackled by Declan McLaughlin and he kind of swings back in his own goal? So that's a minor point, but...
No, it's okay. I was saving that until the conversation about more cards or less cards. But go on.
Well, I'm getting to my point. What was really good for me with Galway in the first half was when Rob Downey did that. That ball went up the pitch, and the Cork men got hit 14 times by Galway. So it was 14 tackles in that phase of play. Ended up being a free to die work, and I was like, I'm rubbing my hands watching this going, this is the kind of shit I've been looking for Galway lads for years, the last number of years. Like a real fight and intent to get on the ball and tackle, right? That lasted 26 minutes. So it went away for 44, I'm afraid. So trouble is just Cork up the pace. They're up to it. Like, and the trouble is, I find this specifically in the second half, was we couldn't get to grasp with the Cork about whatsoever. It wasn't anything monumental. There was no great movement. It's just the clientele that we had versus what they had. We just couldn't match them. We couldn't match Hannard in the air, Connolly. We couldn't match, even Hayes in the full forward line. Shane Barrett, we just couldn't match them. So they were just a level above in terms of their forward unit, particularly on puckouts. And the 2 goals came from Cork winning primary possession of the puckout. So I can point towards these technical errors and these issues with game kind of a setup. But ultimately, if I look across the board and say, was I happy with Galway in the last 2 weeks? I'd have to say I was, I'm content enough. Like, I thought we contested really well below on Tipperary, like really well. And I understand Tip didn't have the full squad out. But considering what Galway have been put out in the last 2 weeks, like the position we're in at the moment versus where we were 12 months ago in the league. You might remember the first game in the league 12 months ago. It was, in truth, lads, it was awful. Was awful, do you know what I mean? And I know teams aren't playing their full body, their full complement, not their Galway. And I think there's 1 or 2 more of the 21, 22-year-olds that I know locally to come in again. I think that can add a bit more freshness. We didn't have Rory Burke yesterday, who, again, you might know him from the Tipperary game the week previous. He's a really good operator and it's going to be pivotal for Galway. So if you're looking at a nucleus of a team, I see a great nucleus in underage players, the lads who have been, let's say from the ages of 18 to 21. I think we start building around them, because what we've been doing the last couple of years has been grand, but we haven't really been competitive, to be fair, lads. So it's time just to, again, re-blood new lads and give them a lease of life. And that's why I'm happy to see them getting a number of games. And I know it's only been 2, but you don't put them out against the finalists unless you've got a seriousness about getting games. Mm. So
yeah,
when you see the likes of, you know, Jason Rabbit, and I think it went away for a while. The big man number 14 went away for a while, didn't it?
Oh man, it's so in vogue. This is like long throws in the Premier League. It went away
for a while. And then I look at the four teams, you know, between last night and today who were on television. And I was saying, right, Brian Hayes came back into 14, Dalton started there, Jason Rabbit was for Galway, then you had Mikey Kiley, you know, for Waterford, and you had Shane O'Brien in for Limerick. And I was like, just land it into them. You know, it keeps teams honest nowadays whereby you can split the ball wide and land it in top of them, and it just causes a bit of carnage. That's what happens, and I think the big man 14 is back and here to stay. I'm delighted to see it.
Yeah, we saw kind of tail end of the championship last year, Murph. Like when we think of even Dublin's win against Limerick, where they put a target man in for the second half and it can create that type of chaos which is required. Cork used it very well at different times last year. Looks like Declan Dalton may well be the man that moves closer to the square this year. Forward played very close to goal today for Tipperary. You don't think Dalton will start?
No, I think he's in trouble, lads.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think when you see the likes of William Buckley come into it, I think there's more players. I think he's in trouble.
Interesting. Yeah. Before I even get to Murph, why do you think he's in trouble?
Sorry. Like, if he was as effective at wing forward as the previous management team thought, right, I don't see him going to the full forward line, especially when you don't start Brian Hayes. I'm not trying to be dismissive now. I'm really not, right? But you don't move him to a position where you know there's two positions locked up already with Hayes and Connolly. You don't do that. You just don't do that. And then you have new blood coming in, the likes of Buckley. And remember, you've... his name escapes me, guys. Help me out here. The wing forward, the English.
Jim Gilly.
Yeah. Hmm. You know, the likes of him, he seemed to have been kind of a replacement, if you like. You know, I can't see him starting, lads. You know, just the way the pace of the game is. And I know he's a big man, but he's not Brian Hayes big.
Yeah. So, he was getting a lot of praise for the Waterford game last week, Murph. So, where are you on Declan Dalton at the moment?
I think Scan's right by way of the competition. Like, one thing we're saying about Cork is that they have huge competition. I'd have no fear when people are saying about Patrick Horgan. Yes, Patrick Horgan's a loss, but like when you see what they have there on the bench and what they've been, like their impact subs, if that's what you want to call it, have been absolutely enormous. Like, those lads are getting a chance now. Not say getting a chance to start now, but like with a new management in, there's always a really good chance there for a fella who maybe feels, I haven't established myself on this team. I don't want to be the 17, 18, 19. I want to be, you know, let's say, particularly with the forwards, 12 to 15. I want to be somewhere there. Mm. Competition. Ben O'Connor will be, like, every manager across the country, never mind Ben O'Connor, will be saying that they want competition for every single place. Declan Dalton has been really good for Cork. And particularly I'm thinking of a few of the games where they've looked for intensity, they've looked for physicality. He's been absolutely outstanding. But then again, you know, as Skettle is saying, like, if you're going in towards the full forward line there, Connolly's going to be there, Hayes is going to be there. What's the other dynamic are they going to be looking for? Dalton, traditionally, we see him there on the wing forward. Do they still want him there, or are they looking for maybe a bit more speed and that? I don't know. But it's an interesting point that Skettle makes, in fairness to it. It's one of those ones, it's really going to come down to championship hurling. You learn a lot during the league. Declan Dalton's going to have a lot of credit in the bank anyway, as it is over the last few years, because he has put in some immense performances. But again, if another player comes along, if they're playing the style that Ben O'Connor and the management want, if they're showing intensity, and that's one of the things I took from Ben O'Connor's comments after the game as well, was that they're really looking for intensity. Even at halftime, they interviewed one of the selectors, and you know, there's a bit of a scuffle going down, and he was kind of saying a bit of physicality as well before halftime. He was saying, you know, our boys needed a kick in the arse there. So they seem to be looking like that they want lads who have a grit in determination in themselves throughout the entire game. And you know, when you look back at the All-Ireland final, maybe Declan Dalton just wasn't to the pitch of the game, but you can say that for a lot of Cork players last year. Maybe they just weren't at the pitch of the game. So look, we'll see. But I'll be honest, I think he will be starting come championship. I don't think, you know, go on, Willie.
Just on him and the All-Ireland final. So Chantaleen Cal about that, they made a very specific plan for him. He was one of the players they targeted, and there was a reason they dropped Willie Connors back in. And the idea was they just wanted Willie Connors to stick on him, because they felt that if they could deny Dalton direct ball, it was a really good way of stopping Cork. And he felt that Connors did a particularly good job in the second half. The trade-off was that he was giving away a lot of physicality by the fact that Connors is smaller, but he felt that Connors was wiry enough to stick with them and just to disrupt them. So Tipperary very much were planning to try and stop his influence on the game. You already mentioned, Scale, about the Downey kind of pullback off the ball, which could have been a card. Do you think it should have been a red?
See, this is where I get caught now with the technicality side of things. You know, I said myself before, like, if there's the foul, and then there's the actual damage, right? And the foul, yes, from the technical side, it was a strike with a hurl. The damage was minimal. You know, I think just it was a lucky case. Should have been a red. There's days I've seen that kind of swipe can be given a red, yeah. I don't like to see that kind of swipe come into the game, really, because that is kind of dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, that type of swipe, if it connects with the right element of the body, you're talking in a break in a bone, you're talking a hand, you're talking a neck, you know what I mean? Just, I would like to see it cut out. I was surprised with it being so close to the Cork goal line that an umpire didn't pick it up, because they're all wired mm-hmm. up. Umpires obviously wired the referee. When you hear it, you could hear the crowd, there was quite a groan about it. But you know what, it was else's guess. Like, it was Declan McLaughlin that got hit. He didn't go down hard enough. You know what I mean? I was laughing at this. Like, I was saying, okay, he stood up, like he took it and then kept going. But if he went down holding himself, down he was in way more trouble. So, like, are you trying to promote that kind of reaction? I hate that reaction myself personally. I don't like this kind of feign and stuff, right? And I'm happy that Declan stood up. But then if the ref catches it, then acting upon it. I don't have a player having to act for you to act. You know what I mean? That's what I don't want to see happening. Player is constantly feigning. Like, I don't want a situation whereby, I won't say it'll ever get there, but like soccer, any kind of foul in soccer, lads are like, they're shot by a sniper, you know, just to get the ref to act, you know. So I would like for the ref to be more proactive as opposed to reactive to a player feigning the injury. But like, if Declan goes down and holds himself in his head, right, that could be red. Because then the umpire would have seen the strike and next thing you know, from a red card. And I would have said, that's probably a touch soft. You know, but just I think it's reckless. Is that a fair word, Murphy? It was just reckless.
Yeah. No,
I don't think he intended it. It was just frustration on the tackle.
It's exactly frustration. That was the word I was thinking of. Like, I can't think of an example where a player does that and it's anything but frustration. Like, you know, it's good tackling. It's probably symptomatic, though, of what you were saying, the earlier point you made, Skell, whereby Galway's tackling was so good. And on a night like that, when the ground is heavy and you can't really get out of tackles and there's lads coming in hitting you, and maybe McLaughlin left a bit on him when he got the tackle. But it's silly from Downey, like, because if the referee gives him a red card in that situation, like, I'm not going to turn the referee saying, "Ah, oh, Jesus Christ." I'm going to say, "Why are you swinging the hurl down you like that?" Because it's blatant. It's so obvious. And I agree with you. Like, that's the other side of it then. It's the flip side where if McLaughlin really sells that, he gets, and we don't want players to have to do that either. So that's the tough argument there, where it's like, if he sells it, go, "Yes, I have been hit." But if he stays up, the referee might go, "Geez, maybe there wasn't something there." So I think in instances like that, it's where the umpires and the linesmen come in that, you know, if they're really on the ball and they can give that to the referee. And like, I'm not pushing here for Downey to be sent off. And even again, this probably ties into what Ben O'Connor was saying after the game, that, you know, the game has gone too policed and that it's been watered down and all this stuff. You know, that aside, I just think that in that situation, Downey was silly to be doing it. Fair play to McLaughlin. He took a bit of snig and just got on with it. But there's a conversation I think that we're going to have. It's going to be recurring over space of the league and the championship, where invariably players will do things like this, and we're going to be sitting here talking, should he or shouldn't he be sent off? It's one of those ones that, right, grand, get on with it. If everyone's happy enough, get on with it, fine. But if Downey gets a red card there, you're going, well, we know where the game is in the modern age, that players will get red cards for this. Mm-hmm. So it's a very grey one.
Two lads are both, I think, by definition, genuine hurling people, which Ben O'Connor was talking about, who says they don't want these cards. So he said, "We're going like soccer, aren't we? Black cards, red cards, yellow cards, technical areas. We're following that game. Look, that's the fellas above trying to cleanse hurling. That's what you're trying to do, if you want to be fair about it. They don't want any dust up. They don't want any bit of blood spilt. They don't want a hurley broke. They just want a nice game for my little Johnny at home. Genuine hurling people don't want that. They want a good, hard, physical game. No one is hurt when it's played that way. There wasn't a dirty stroke pulled outside there tonight." Can argue that. No one got hurt. So I don't know, Skell, you're a genuine hurling man. Is the game getting too soft?
I don't want to throw the word soft, you know, around too easily. I do think that a lot of the physicality is being ruled out. Now, this is where I'm slightly conflicted a bit, because, you know, I have to go back a bit here and go to NFL. Do you remember the film Concussion?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So back years ago, the NFL were ignorant to the causes of CTE. They said, they didn't even say it was a thing, right? And I'm not saying it's going to go that way, right? But one thing I noticed, lads, right, this weekend when I watched the four teams, was I couldn't get over their conditioning and size. I could not get over it. Like, I watched the four teams and Cork, they all look massive. Waterford today, I thought, geez, these boys look absolutely huge, right? So we're probably looking at hurling teams nowadays who are probably equating in size to rugby teams maybe 10 years ago. You know, I'm talking about defensive backs now in rugby. Like, they're probably the same kind of size and physicality. So when you start, you know, using the shoulders and hitting front and tackles, you know, and swinging hurlies, I just think it's a far more dangerous element to a game nowadays than it was maybe 20 years ago. I love the physicality. I love, you know, the hard hurling we grew up watching in the 90s and the 2000s, right? But I just think that the way the players are conditioned now, their body is like a weapon in itself. You know, there's a big difference between James O'Connor, a wing forward for Clare 97, you know, versus now Gareth Hegarty or versus Mikey Kelly. These lads are just absolute tanks. So if we're, I think the onus is on a tackler to be safe. We've seen it before, like, where mistimed tackles catch the chin. I don't want that, you know what I mean? But I don't want the hardness or toughness, the intent to go out of hurling. I really don't. I just, and I see what Ben is saying about they're trying to cleanse hurling. I just think what they're trying to do is limit the level of incidents, the potential dangerous incidents, because we've had incidents before in the past where you say, if that's mistimed a millisecond later, you know, someone's neck is broken. We said this on the podcast last year, the year previous, that, you know, we're heading down that route. You know what I mean? That if we get too red-blooded and dive in like too much like rugby, someone's going to get seriously hurt. And there was an incident blow in Waterford. Do you remember there was a game? You'll help me out here, but someone got tackled and it was a chin tackle. And you say, that's a millisecond.
There was the Offaly Waterford game at the tail end of the league last year, wasn't it?
Was it? Was that the one where it was like, oh, that was a bad tackle? You know what I mean? You're saying, fuck, that could really hurt some lad. You know, like we ruled out. Do you remember back, I suppose, maybe 10 years ago, the frontal challenge got ruled out? Where one time a lad was run at you, you can nearly hit him in front with the shoulder to the chest. That's gone. So that was, I was in favour of that. You know, I'd hate to see the shoulder to shoulder go. You know, I just think with the way lads are conditioned so much now, even the arm tackle is lethal, lads. You know, so Murphy, we both got hit by them. Big fellas where you're trying to go out by them and they hit you in the arm, catches in the neck. Jeez, it's a fair... It's a fair enough for tackling. And that's the way the condition has gone nowadays, that the guys are like rugby players. I thought today it took my eye when I saw Waterford. Like, above all years, when I saw, like, Fitzgerald centre-back, you know, like, even your man, like, what's his name, the midfielder, Lynch, you know, Mikey Kiley. Jeez, these guys have put on some, you know, some conditioning. So,
yeah,
you've got weapons out there, 15 weapons, and that's not the hurdles.
Where are you on this, Murph?
Where am I on it? I'd agree with Scott. Like, the physicality is a huge part of the game in terms of it's different. You can't put players in the same category. Even go back 15 years ago, it's different again. Like, they're moving at such pace now at the moment. Like, one of the things, to give you an example, one of the things that is measured with intercounty players at the moment is meters per second. And oftentimes they can see that if the player's going really well, how many times does he break the 10 meters per second barrier during a game? Like, so that's serious pace if you're moving at that. But generally all intercounty players are capable of breaking that barrier. He's also right. As Kettle will tell you this, I'd say the average weight of an intercounty player at the moment is probably around 88 to 92 kg, let's say. But then the bigger lads, Dan Morrissey and these boys, Garrod Hegarty, like all these, there's lots of lads there, that Mikey Kyle and these boys, they're all, you know, 94 kg, 95. A 94 kg player moving at 10 meters a second is serious speed. So within that, you have to view it through a small bit of a different lens. If I tie Ben O'Connor's comments into it, I actually thought the game was really good last night. I was really surprised at the physicality and the intensity and all that. I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was really good. I think when you're a manager on the sideline, he's looking at it from his own players, and maybe a few of the breaks didn't go their way. As a neutral, I was looking at it going, geez, okay, maybe one or two calls here or there. But I thought it was actually really well reffed. I thought the physicality was great. There was a lot of really hard tackling. And tackling, I'm going to say, on the edge. There was no, let's say, rule out Downey or whatever like that. It was all physical, manly stuff, and we want to see that. We do want to see that. But we also have to then temper it with saying, you know, last year we were talking about, let's say, Cooney's tackle on Mike Casey down below in the Gaelic grounds where he hit him high. And no, he wasn't sent off for it, but it was straight to the head. That's the tackle we don't want to see. So I think we can have a balanced conversation about it to say that there's certain tackles we don't want to see. And there's certain tackles that, you know, may look innocuous enough, as Skehill is there saying there with the leading arm coming in. Like, that additional arm, he's right. Like, it might look as bad as a shoulder-to-head tackle, but there is a huge amount of physicality that goes into it. And if it's timed wrong, you can really injure a player. I think it's a conversation that has to be continuously held in terms of, I don't think we can sit here tonight and say, this is what I want to see forevermore in hurling, that's it, done. Because as the game changes, our views around the physicality have to change as well. I want to see it stay physical. I want to see hard hits. I want to see tackles. And I think even the Limerick-Waterford game again today, great example there of huge amount of hits going in. Yes, there was yellow cards and there was borderline stuff and all this stuff and black cards and all that. But with good intentions at all times, players were going in with physicality. So, look, I think with the conversation, we're going to be having it in 6 weeks, 10 weeks time. We're going to be having it in 5 and 6 and 10 years time as well. But at the moment, I would think, yes, we need to police certain parts of it. But I'd agree with Ben O'Connor, I'd love to keep that physicality within the game as best we can, but I suppose within a sporting and safe manner, if that's the best way to put it.
Strap yourself in. These conversations are continuing throughout the league.
We're getting deep for the first podcast, aren't we? By God.
We are. Yeah.
I don't know about the too many cards thing. I know, obviously, we'll talk about the black card.
Sorry, can I just jump in there? I texted into the group there today. Sorry, I know the context he was saying it in. He probably it was a throwaway line, but he said that obviously the red and yellow cards. Red and yellow cards are in 27 years. So like it's not that they've been introduced lately. Like half the, I said the average age of Ben O'Connor's team is probably about 25. So he has lads born after the cards were introduced. So I just thought it was funny. But look, I understand Ben O'Connor said that after game. It's like Kieran McGeaney last night. Just get to close your ears. I'm talking a bit of football here. But Kieran McGeaney gave a very honest interview after the game, after Armagh's game, on the views, on his views of the new hurling rules, and particularly the bringing the ball up 50 metres, etc. I think it's kind of maybe refreshing just to see managers being very honest. And I think during the league, you can afford that bit of honesty. You can just come out. So I actually appreciate Ben O'Connor's honesty in hearing his view on it. But I did laugh at how he phrased the whole, the introduction, yellow and red cards. He played in an All-Ireland final the year it was introduced. So it wasn't today or yesterday.
Well, we definitely don't see enough black cards. They should happen way more often. We saw one obviously happen in the Waterford Limerick game today. But generally, I think as the year goes on, we see a few in the league. And then when championship comes around, the black card seems to disappear from the referee's back pocket. It's already seen.
It's probably one of the first years, though, we are coming into hurling without an emphasis having been placed. I haven't seen emphasis being placed on any particular rule at the moment. Remember, like, we were face guards there, go back, I don't know, 3 years. Face guards was one of them. Hand pass. I remember one game, I can't remember which it was, but there was a Tipperary played down in Semple Stadium. In one first rounds of league matches, and I think there was about 40 frees. There was and I can't remember what rule it was around, but this seems to be one of the first years in hurling we're coming in that there's no real talk of any rules. So I'm just happy enough to keep it quiet at the moment that they don't suddenly pick a rule and say, listen, we have to really focus on this.
Having the public now accepted that the hand pass is just now a crock of shit.
I think
hand pass was important a couple of years ago, but now after watching the games the last 2 years, like, the public just don't care anymore. They know every team is doing it at this stage.
Yeah. Every team, you know, club and inter-county, it's pretty much, would you say it's 50-50 the hand passes? Would you say it's...
I'd be going more towards the 80-20 worth.
In terms of 80 thrown?
Thrown.
80 thrown, but the 20% is getting caught. That's the joke. It's not that they're thrown like 90% of the time. Like some of the passes today, I mean, were ridiculous in the Waterford Limerick game.
So go on, before I get accused of not pulling you up on this, who was doing more throwing, or was it across both teams?
It was both teams. Like there was one move there in the second half where Waterford got I think it was Callum Lyons' goal shot that he had in the second half. That was probably a move from the back that Waterford did. One stick pass out of their defence. There was four hand type passes after that then, right? And when Callum received the ball, I was like, that's definitely three throws I saw in a row there. Colin Lyons was kind of holding his hand up to his throat, they couldn't really see it. That's a big deal. But I think everyone, even the rules committee, the referees committee, the GA are going, this is impossible to police without pissing off a whole host of people. If you were to police it and show a clear striking action, every hand pass would be pulled. And because nowadays the tackle is so vicious, you know what I mean, where people are...
Yeah,
tackled by 2, 3, 4 people in a matter of milliseconds, small seconds, right? You haven't got time to get clear strike in action. So I think they've just said this is a byproduct of where the game is at, how physical it is, how fast people tackle. Fuck it, just let it off. Drive on.
But sure, isn't it like we had this conversation I think last year as well, where it's like, right, you know, let's say you get rid of the hand pass. How do players get the ball out of their possession when they're surrounded by 2 or 3? Because oftentimes you see it, you'll see a column during the week and somebody will come out with a column and they'll say, oh, it should be only a pass at the stick. And I think even Podge Collins had a suggestion to the Congress as well about, you know, has to be a pass in a certain way. The only point, just as a general point, I say to people is that if it's not the hand pass, you have a person surrounded by 2 or 3 players, which we see in every single game, every, you know, couple of minutes, every minute and a half probably. How does that person remove the ball without it becoming a ruck? Without a hand pass.
It just
becomes a ruck. So what we then see is a game of rucks after a while, particularly during the league, we'll see a huge amount of rucks. Come to championship, we'll see after that then. But any wet days or anything where it's hard to move the ball anyway. So to play a devil's advocate on that one, the other side is that what's the other solution that moves the ball on quickly, that's in favour of the person that's in possession, that we can implement into the game that won't suddenly develop into rucks and all these things? Because I think if we have lots of rucks, then suddenly people turn around and say, oh, the game is gone, you know, it's all, you know, etc., tactics and all that. But that's the one concern I'd have, is that if we do go away from it, I'm not, you know, promoting throwing the ball around the place, but if we don't have a realistic solution that's easy on the player that's in possession while being tackled by 3 absolute giants, like how do we solve it? So that's one I think is going to rumble on for quite a while.
The clamp down didn't work. We had this 2 years ago, early last year, the referee's been given, and then people were arguing, actually, if we slow this frame by frame, you can see that actually there is a clear strike in motion, and you're just thinking, there's no way this is going to be called later in the year. Round two or round three of the league, referee can blow every single one of them. What tends to happen is when there's more on the line, when we get to provincials and we get to the All-Ireland Series, you see throw passes happen all the time. And I think that motion was well-intentioned, that Tipperary brought to Congress a couple of years ago, where it would have to be out of your non-dominant hands, so you'd have to almost switch hands to hand pass. Unfortunately, I think so many guys would tie people up in tackles. You get what Murph was saying. The ball would end up hitting the ground. Then we end up with a ruck. The referee has to come in, throw the ball in. That's horrific.
I think the one I'm throwing is, we were playing up as far as the Club All-Ireland semi-final. I was throwing balls. I just be straight out.
Yes, like, honestly, that's what I'm talking about.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'm saying it from the point of view that, like, as in it was... when you're on the borderline of being called, Skell, you're after wrecking the place.
I was close.
On the borderline of about to be called for steps, you'll give it one last roll of the dice to get rid of the ball. Now, I'm not saying I did it the whole time, but I definitely did it at some stage. You telling me, like, if I played maybe 14 matches this year, I didn't do it. I'm not here pontificating about other players saying, oh, I'm doing it, and you're not. I was definitely throwing balls at some stage this year. Maybe even one or two got blown up. I don't know. But what I'm saying is that if you got any inter-county player or any club player onto this podcast and we spoke about it, they've also thrown balls, but I'd agree with you, Will. Like, there's a lot of well-intentioned suggestions. I'm not knocking any of them, but well-intentioned or not, is it the correct solution? So that's the trick, you know?
Okay. Waterford, as I mentioned at the outset, this is a rare win for them against Limerick. Limerick have put misery onto them in recent years. So the last 5 years, Waterford haven't overcome Limerick in league or championship. So they get the win today. Reuben Halloran hits 11 points, 10 frees and a 65. He also, crucially, won the penalty 10 minutes into the second half, which Shane Bennett slotted away. And Waterford kind of made hay during that period. So Matthew Fitzgerald was getting a chance today for Limerick. He got black carded for that foul. When the penalty went in, it was 1-4 to 3 points in the 10 minutes. That Limerick were a man short, and ultimately I think that probably created the buffer that saw Waterford come out by 4 points in the end, 121 to 20 points. You were impressed, Scale, by Waterford's physicality. Were you impressed by them overall and how they hurled today?
I thought they were sharp enough. Considering like we're in the first day of February, for this time of year where teams are obviously they're training in the dark, they're training in heavy pitches, they're training under lights, obviously, that kind of slickness doesn't really come into your game until like April or May, at the end of April or May. And that's what we find. That's the same with every team. That's conditional. But I just thought Waterford looked slick. So they had a good mixture of, they had great intent. They were physical in tackle. They were able to go man-to-man, which I like with teams versus Limerick. So they didn't need assistance. You know what I mean? They didn't need 2v1. They didn't drop off, let's say, two sweepers and have, let's say, 13, 14 lads behind the ball instead of 45. They went man-to-man and went toe-to-toe, let's say, as an individual, which was really impressive. Now, in saying that, everyone knows, like watching that game, Limerick, they weren't at the races. They didn't do anything extravagant. Even their puck out, you know, structure was very orthodox. There wasn't a huge amount of movement. It was very set, either go 10 to 12. The pace at which the puck out came was slower than we're kind of accustomed to. Normally, you see Limerick trying to get go quick. That wasn't really there at all. There wasn't a huge amount of concern, even from Colley's perspective. I think I noted there 15 minutes to go and the game is in the melting pot. He brought on four players that, you know, he's trying to introduce. I don't know them. Flanagan, Donovan, Fitzgerald, Farrell, don't know them. You know what I mean? So great to get minutes in those guys. I don't think Colley's worried at all about the result per se, but just trying to get his squad built deeper. But Waterford finished the game. So even when Limerick came back in the last couple of minutes, they finished a strong couple of big Billy Nolan frees, let's say, added to the a bit of a kind of a champagne situation for the goalie there. But I do think certain pitches play tight, and I've said this before. You know, there's a reason that like Waterford got, you know, I would say it. It's the only way I can use it for last week. To be fair, that they got it last week in a big spacious pitch. This kind of pitch will suit them, whereas the parameters are tighter. They can use physicality much more. They can go one-to-one much more. They don't have to get into a very kind of set, I would say, structure defensively, trying to combat runners and combat, you know, lads vacating space, vacating wings. In Walsh Park, you can play tight. You know what I mean? You can go man-to-man. And I just think that kind of helped to a degree. And you know, it came at the right time because last week was tough. It was tough for them. And this was the kind of right kind of fixture to get a really top-class team at home with a nice crowd in a tight enough pitch and you make it a battle. And credit where credit is due. And I thought at halftime, genuinely, I said, Joe, this could be tough for them to bring it home. But they did. You know, they did. And like even Haller did fierce well with his freeze, hitting the dead balls. It's been an issue with Waterford. Certain teams, we've mentioned Waterford, we said Wexford before, you know, Dublin without Dolanbrook. You know, free check and you have to be hitting 95%. So, like, the way Halloran operated today, I think it was impressive. I will say, though, he did dive for the penalty. He did dive. Let's be honest about it now. He threw his legs out from under him. Poor old Fitzgerald got the draw deal there, I think, and he got the black card. And I just said, you're cute, devil. But hey, come here. If you can buy it, do it. Simple as that. So it was clever. But again, look, that was a pivotal moment. As you said, Will, I had 1-4-5. You've 1-4-3. Is that what you have?
Yeah, it was 1-4-3 and 43-53, I think.
Okay, maybe I missed.
I'm open to correction, though. You keep immaculate notes, in fairness.
Yeah, but go to Watford, like say, what you're looking for in a league campaign is to find the person who we have never seen before. You know, to a degree. We're looking for a player that who's going to be the new lease of life, the new blood. And I had mentioned, you know, Brian Lynch and Charlie G. Do you know what I mean? Those two guys, I was saying, right, that's a major contribution. Treen got, was it 3 points? 4 points?
Three from play.
I'm down for three here. Lynch, he's a big boy, lads. He's a big boy. He's well able to shift his weight around, let's say, and he was upsetting. Like the Limerick midfield, you would say, were, I won't say the non-existent, but they weren't as existent as you grow accustomed to. Now, I know, Will, I don't know who wasn't playing, you know, in his usual role. He's gone to a six now, which is another question. Is he going to be there long-term? But well, the Limerick midfield weren't, you know.
That's a good point, just to pick up on that. So, Will O'Donoghue seems to be set at six here. So, he played there, Munster Hurling League final, played there today. When Hannan was injured 2 years ago, that was very much where Will O'Donoghue dropped into. Last year, they tried a revolving cast of players at six, Murph. And, you know, ultimately, it seems that Will O'Donoghue is now, I would think, the obvious six right now. But what are you stealing away from him playing in midfield if he does end up as Limerick centre halfback?
Like when I think Will O'Donoghue, I just think of the intensity of tackling and kind of the marker he sets down for Limerick straight away. Like, I mean, his biggest, I suppose, talent is that he really sets the tone for Limerick across around the whole field, really, just by his intensity as soon as the ball is thrown in, his tackling, his ability to break up play. Like, I often think of so many teams, you know, the Rock de Perichon was trying to move the ball out through the half-back lane, intra midfield, and suddenly, well, when O'Donovan and himself were both there, they were really good at breaking it up. But his intensity and physicality was absolutely mighty there. I think that's his best position. I think, like, in midfield, and I think that with some players, when you move them around, you know, you're not robbing Peter to pay Paul. But I think when Limerick have so many players, and like, who am I to know? Like, I mean, Kinnerka and Kylie, they're the experts. But when I look at it from the outside, I look at it going, if I was playing Limerick tomorrow, I would hate to see Will O'Donoghue at midfield. I'd rather see him at centre back. And I just think that they have plenty of lads who have played or who have been a bit power players, but Colin Coughlin, these boys, Colin O'Neill, who have been around that half back line. And I think Colin O'Neill going further up the field, but Coughlin's been there as well. Kind of cut from the same cloth. Big physical player, well able to get around, good hurler, well able to move up the field. I think there's other lads there for me that I think could fit in that sixth position and keep Will O'Donoghue up further. Because I feel he has just a greater impact there. So as I was saying, if I was playing him tomorrow and I saw him at centre-back, I'd be saying, well, thank God he's not at midfield because he does serious damage there.
Especially his strength, Murph, isn't it? Like,
His engine, his strength, his intensity, everything.
At centre back, you're asking him to hurl more. You're asking him to upset, like, and just destroy things, right? And I know that sounds like he's not a good. I'm not saying that in any way, shape, or form. I'm just saying in midfield, he's the best tackler and the best engine in the country. But I don't think anybody's going to question that. At centre back, you're asking him to kind of limit those resources you have in your team to go hurl more. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah.
If I'm the same as you, Murph, I repeat what you said, Kylie Knurk. They're the experts. We're not.
Oh, yeah. Like,
look from the outside, we don't know who is an enforcer. He's been called what? The Terminator. He's been called, say, at times. And he's, that kind of relentless force is invaluable in days. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it just didn't have the same. Now, I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but I don't have an English in the midfield. It didn't have the same level of like, aura. Does that make sense? You know what I mean?
Mm, yeah.
So, like, if you're lined up for a throw in, I don't know who's there, you're like, oh, shit, this is going to be a wrestling. This is going to be tough. You know what I mean?
But
I think you can kind of get around him more. Do you get me?
Mm. Yeah,
you go over him, around him, whereas midfield is hard to get through him.
You can. I'd agree with you because I think like when teams at the moment are trying to move the ball out from, let's say, full back line, half back line, but let's say a ball breaks down on your own 45 and you're working it out, you're getting that movement going. So let's say you're moving the ball out between popping it to players between the 45 and the 65 to midfield. That's probably the best area or the most likely area you're going to break down that passage of play is in that area. But by the time that gets to the half back line, the half back line usually have a very tough job there where they're caught with an overlap then. The overlap develops, not straight away, it develops by the time midfield half forward line. So by the time it develops to that stage, you now have a player who is actually facing potentially an overlap, if not a 2-on-1 situation where they do I go or don't I go. If that play is broken down at midfield to half back line up the far end, well, then it never develops going further. And you're asking yourself, what type of players break that up? Physical players, players who just get stuck in. That, for me, is where Willa Donoghue, like, he just drifts. He plays at that 8-9 position, but drifts up. And as soon as the opposition team are bringing the ball out, he's then hitting there. But he doesn't get to do that job from centre-back. He has to do a bit more of a passive role where he moves around, tries to get on ball. And, you know, again, that just brings me back to my point. It's probably what you're saying as well, Skell, is that that's not his style. His style is hitting lads, being involved, and driving the team on.
Yeah. Mm.
James O'Connor was saying to me, Murph, he reckons Limerick are probably still the best panel in the country right now, and they're probably still the team to beat, despite what we saw against Dublin, particularly second half in Croke Park last year. Are you in a similar boat, despite the fact they've lost this first game? They don't play in the first round of Munster either, so Kyleen Kinnear can probably, I guess, feel their way into the year. A certain extent, win the league is probably neither here nor there for Limerick this season. Mm. Where do you rate Limerick now after week one for them?
For them, well, in terms of, I suppose, your first point, do they have the best panel in the country? I would say the panel is between them and Cork in terms of, like, when you really dig into the reserves, that's what we're talking about. This is not saying that, obviously, Tipperary, I'm hearing Tipperary people shouting at me, we were the best team last year. Absolutely. But what I'm saying is that when you really dig into those reserves across the county and, you know, you're 30, even the rest of the extended panel is tested, for me, those are the two teams that really can dig into it there. Do you have those basically all-star forwards and defenders on the bench? You'd be saying that for Cork and Limerick. Where do I rate Limerick? There's no team at the moment that I'm saying these are the lads to beat. Like, there's no team. When we go back and we look at Limerick for the four in a row, each year we were starting this podcast, we were sitting here going, if you're going to win an All-Ireland, you have to beat Limerick. There's no team at the moment that's really standing out for me like that. With that said, Limerick are going to be there, thereabouts. Yes, they were caught in the quarterfinal this year by Dublin. Absolutely. It's a big learning curve for them because it was one of those games where you arrive to the pitch of the game, or you don't arrive to the pitch of the game, and it's very hard to rewind then. It's very hard to get yourself adjusted and go on and try and, I suppose, get the mindset right when you're on the field. So they were caught there. Big learning curve for them. Caroline Curd's back on board this year. Probably something we haven't mentioned. She consistently, I suppose, call a spade a spade. She's never let them, as far as I'm concerned, come to the pitch of the game in the wrong mindset. Like, they just seem to be in the right place. When those lads are in the right place upstairs and they're focused and they're tuned, they're very hard to beat. Are they the team to beat? I think if you're going to have to win an All-Ireland this year, you will have to beat Limerick. You absolutely will have to beat them. I just think that, like, again, if they get the wheels going, like, they can go three or four games here in the league, maybe not shooting the lights out, maybe not impressing. People can ask questions. And we saw it last year, come to the first round of the championship, and by God, they hit road. So, look, for me with Limerick, I think you'd be very foolish to write them out, or you'd be very foolish to say they've gone off the boil, because they have too much experience, too many good players that they can just arrive on and suddenly... They are the one team, I would say, that can really turn it on the day, even though their previous form mightn't indicate it, they can perform on the day. So, a probably long-winded answer to your question there, Will, but are they my number one team? No, I'm not going to say they're my number one team at the moment, no, but you will have to beat them to win in All-Ireland.
So who is number one?
I knew that was coming.
Well, I would still give it to Tipperary, to be fair.
Okay.
Like, I know they weren't playing, they were playing Offaly this weekend, but they were impressive.
They came to play there. We'll get there in a minute.
Yeah, and against Galway, like, we weren't here last week. They were really good. On a bad night for Hurling, they were really good. So, like, I'm not going to take away from where they came from, the All-Ireland. They didn't, like, we spoke about it during the week, Will. That panel is still the same panel. There was no major exodus or anything during the winter season. And when we saw them in the first round there, they looked hungry. They looked like the appetite is still there. So at the moment, like, if we were doing a ranking, we're not going to do it. I'm not going to edge anyone into it. But I'll give it to Tipperary, because credit where credit's due.
Save power rankings until the break week. We'll go there. Absolutely. With that. It's a nice way of filling that one. Who's number one for you, though, Skell? Right now.
It actually hurts me to say it. Let's just say I'm not disagreeing with Murph. I'm not disagreeing with Murph. I said this every year, lads, right? Whoever wins that Ireland the year previous, they come into the number one team. They deserve to be called number one team. Someone has to show up, let's say, not in the league now, in the kind of getting close to the championship. Yeah. Someone has to put their head well above the parapet for me to even say they deserve a shot at knocking off the number one team. So as for the next, I suppose, 2 months, you won't hear me say Tipperary aren't the number one team. They are, and they deserve it so. And, like, in terms of squad depth, like, I agree with you about the Tip are grown, because, like, who won the 20s last year? You know what I mean? So it's not as if, like, they don't have, you know, a plethora of young players coming through. And we saw the difference that young players made last year to their team that we didn't know 12 months previous, like, with McCarthy. And even Farrell, Morgan, like Doyle, these lads came in, they were relatively new to the squad, you could say. Look at the difference they make. So who's to say there isn't another, you know, McCarthy type person waiting in the wings to hop in midfield somewhere? I don't know yet. But like they're growing too. And I agree with you. I think as of right now, the winner of the Ireland comes out of Munster. The three strongest groups in the country would be Tip, Cork and Limerick. I think the gap between Limerick and the others has closed significantly. Limerick before were juggernaut status, whereby their panel was so strong that they had covered multiple positions that the gap was quite large. Whereas now I think the gap has, it's I don't think there's a gap anymore, to be honest with you. I think it's right there, level off. That's me kind of with my crystal ball saying what's going to happen in 3 months' time. But right now it's Tipperary at top, and I would have Cork 2, Limerick 3 at the minute, right now.
What have we become? Once upon a time, we were in the comments on the Premier Review podcast, and the three of us were the biggest Tipperary haters in the entire country. We wouldn't give them a chance to get out of Munster.
We were realists. We were realists, and we turned out to be true. We turned out to be correct. Sorry. So let's just slow the roll a little bit there now, right? Not that we've anything against Tip, right? Right? But we were proven correct. So I'm just putting that out there, okay?
That's okay. I can still see someone using the GIF from the live show in the Borgosh, and 100% it's I effing love Tip is going to be.
How do we work this GDPR thing? How do we stop this? How do we get rid of it?
It's out there now. It's done. You have to contact Elon Musk to get rid of it now.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm pretty sure Cracky the Ash is the one who will pull that out of the fire, but they may well be keeping the head down after Limerick losing today. I was curious timing as well that Shane Dowling decided to go in hard on Waterford just a few days before his county played them.
Be careful. Be careful doing that. He's just back into punditry. Be careful, buddy.
I know. It just wasn't the time. What you do is you go and talk about everybody else and you say, oh, weren't Cork very impressive last week? You don't say Waterford looking massive trouble already.
Yeah. It's a ballsy move. It's like, you ever see, was a dodgeball? It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Like, you know, it's like, that's just... Let's just keep it between the ditches for week two of the league. Yeah.
But that's what you call a two-footed tackle. Straight in, two-footed tackle. That was heavy going straight away week one.
Yeah.
It feels like a really important win for Waterford, though, because Ozzie puts them on 2 points. They play Offaly this coming week. We'll preview that in the members' pod for this week. But if they beat Offaly, who have taken a heavy beating today against Tipperary, it puts Waterford onto 4 points, and it's going to give them a chance of staying up even on four. I know two go down this year, but... it's a really good start from the first three games, and people would have probably... I know Shane Dowling wasn't alone in being concerned about Waterford after their performance against Cork, where they allowed Cork to beat them, I think, the week before at Páirc Uí Chaoimh. The Offaly-Tipperary game, I was watching the Limerick-Waterford game on the TG Carr player while I was listening to this one on the radio at the same time. This was clinical from Tipperary. They brought the vast majority of the 6,000 fans that were in Tullamore today. Perhaps most importantly for Tip, they hit five wides across the whole game, which is really, really impressive. They had 417 scored by the 46th minute. They finished up with 524, 310 of that coming from Jason Ford. Paddy McCormick got his first goal at senior level for Tip. And earlier, John McGrath came on at halftime. His brother Noel came on during the game too. He scored 1-1. Offaly decided to go with three target men in the full forward line, which is maybe a sign of what's going to come for the rest of the year. They put Kieran Cahill up with kind of 14 to try and just break ball, or Kieran Cleary, I should say, up close to goal to try and break ball. Owen Cahill came in for Adam Screeny before the game, and then Brian Dighton and Nushin Kelly ended up playing quite close to goal as well. Dighton got 1-2, Kelly got 2 points, but Offaly's scores dried up when they didn't have the wind at their back in the second half. Didn't score between minute 35 and minute 51. And it's a pretty chastening defeat in the end, 5-24 to 1 goal in 19. So, Murph, that's the thing. I mean, Tip were able to try new lads out. They were able to bring experienced players in when they were required today. Ford gets a hatful of goals, gets a hat-trick during the game as well. Considering that, you know, 2 weeks in, Tip will be fairly happy where they're at, won't they?
Yeah, they will. You know, I don't know what... It's a pity there's not much to be said about this game. I suppose another thing to be said is, you know, Offaly are carrying the injuries. It's not to say that that's the reason this game ended up the way it ended up. But Tipperary wouldn't have learned a huge amount from it. Like, it's probably... Tipperary are probably happy enough that this was the second game or you know, if it was going to be a third game or whatever. Like, they would be happy now that they got a good test against Galway. Because the big thing is, when you come back as All-Ireland champions, is where are we at now? Like, you know, as a panel, as a group, we've trained away, we're back doing our bit. So at least they know something about themselves from the Galway game. But I suppose the only thing that Tipperary will look at this game and go is that, look, we can only control our own game. We can't control who's in front of us. They performed really well, but nobody takes a huge amount from this game, unfortunately, which is a pity for Offaly as well. But yeah, look, it's just not very much to dissect in this, unfortunately. Like there was periods there where Offaly obviously went through where they didn't score. Was it, you know, maybe 15 minutes or 16 minutes they went through in the second half, they didn't score. You know, as you were saying earlier, Will, 4:17 Tipperary had on the board by about the 45th or 50th minute. Like, just big scoring. So, unfortunately here, look, Tipperary will be happy. They're going back down the road and big game against Cork next weekend. But they'll be very happy that, look, we've played two matches. We have maximum points on the board. We're headed in the right direction. Not much more they could say about it after that.
Yeah, so there's no clarity after the game. So Offaly's captain for this year is going to be Charlie Mitchell. He has a cardiac issue, so it's unlikely he's going to play for the rest of the league, it would seem. But Johnny Kelly, the Offaly manager, said afterwards he can't make a call, and I think he's going for a scan next week. So he said it's up to the medical team. They won't be playing him until he's 100% cleared. So it's unfortunate for him, because he was really, really good last year. And just other lads who are missing at the moment or aren't 100% fit. Kieran Burke, who would have been the fullback, is out at the moment. Yeah, Liam Hoare had a good game in the goals. He was under 20 goalkeeper a couple of years ago. It was a couple of long range frees. Yeah, he's really good at hitting them now, and couldn't do a whole lot. I mean, when the penalty went in, he made four or five really good saves during the match. So Tip could easily have scored 9 or 10 goals during the game today. But I think when we talk about there being levels between things, when people are getting excited about where are Offaly going to go and where they're going to go with these under 20s and so on, when there's a few key personnel that are missing, that depth just isn't there, and they're going to take a kicking from, I think, from some of these teams in 1A. So I'd be very surprised if Offaly aren't going straight back down, but that's where we're at.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a somber note, Will.
I know, but it's one of those things, as an Offaly man, where you're really excited about last season, where they built up all this momentum through 1B, got results, the win at Croke Park, all that type of stuff. And you're thinking, right, it's fantastic to get promoted, and they're back up into the Leinster Senior Championship. They maintained that status last season by beating Antrim in the last game. I think this is the most important thing. They're being exposed to top flight hurling in both. But then you realise that when they are going up against Cork, Limerick, Tipperary, these teams who are just much stronger and got much more depth, they are going to take a mowing every now and then. And I think realistically, they looked at the Kilkenny team that was picked the week before, and Kilkenny weren't anywhere near where their 15 is going to be come championship. That was maybe more of an opportunity than today, where Tipperary, I think, were respectful how they picked. They tried a few lads out, but at the same time, a lot of the key personnel were involved today. So a handsome win for Tipperary. That leaves 1A looking like this. You've got Tipperary with two wins from two. They've got the best scoring difference naturally after today. Cork have also got two from two, so they're both sitting there on four. Kilkenny have got a win, but this was their bye week, so they've got 2 points on the board. Waterford similarly, but Waterford have played two games as opposed to one. Limerick have played just the one game, no points as yet, and Galway and Offaly prop up the table with two defeats from two. Next week, of course, the last week before the break week. Division 1B, what happened at the weekend just gone by? Well, we nearly had a massive shock in the Down Wexford game, which I don't think too many people were probably expecting. Wexford did 20 points on the board by half time. You're kind of thinking this is going to be comfortable. They had that dramatic win with the Mark Fanning free, whether it should have been as close to goal as it was when it went in against Antrim or not. But they beat Northern opposition 2 weeks in a row. But it took very late points, one coming from Simon Roach and the other one from Conor Hearn, as they beat Down by 27 points to 25. So they were blessed, I think, in Ballycran to get away with the 2 points as things went. Some key personnel are missing, including Rory O'Connor, won't be around for the entire year. And then Antrim Clare was probably... He is going travelling to Australia.
Good for him, yeah.
So yeah, his partner, Amy Gavin Mangan, plays for North Melbourne. They were the AFLW champions. So I believe he's heading over for the year to kind of Melbourne direction, probably do a bit of travelling in Australia. So
Is that new news or was that announced like late last year?
No, I think it's been known.
It was forecast,
It was forecast, definitely. I think there was talk that he could potentially have gone last year when she initially moved over. She won a premiership then with North Melbourne last year. She's announced she's going back for a second season. And I think, to be fair to Rory, I think he's known since the tail end of club. So they had a good run in the club championship once that finished.
The St. Martin's run probably delayed it a bit, did it?
I'd say so. I'd say possibly, yeah. So it's going to be a massive loss, though.
I know, but good for him, though. Jesus.
Yeah, I know. He's been a kind of a constant intercounty player since he came out of his teens, really, so he deserves a year out. Elsewhere, we had Antrim against Clare, the Davy Derby, part two in Division 1B. There's a few of them. Mark Rogers scored 12 points, 7 frees. Dave Fitzgerald and Shane Meehan also hit the net. Very comprehensive win for Clare. I was watching our good friend Podge Collins talking about this, and he was pointing out that basically Davy's a horrific record against Clare, whether it's Waterford, Wexford, Antrim. Clare generally tend to inflict a bit of misery. But the thing is, Murph, that kind of stood out to me on this one. So Tony Kelly started, he scored 5 points. Shane O'Donnell came on. we have got used to the last few years. Obviously, with Tony's injury, he was very curtailed at the start of the last couple of seasons. Mm. And Shane O'Donnell generally came in very late. He came in for a league final one year, and last year we didn't get to see him until championship. If this is a case of the band getting back together one more time, Clare are going seriously at the start of 1B if they've got both these guys out at the start of the season.
Yeah, well, I actually think 1B, I think we might have mentioned it at the, was it maybe even the middle of last year or something. I think 1B might be good for Clare this year. I'm not talking down to them at all. But like, they have a really good panel. They have a serious panel. They're capable of doing great things this year. But the intensity when you're up in 1A, with it, let's say if Tony Kelly, maybe you were 50-50 about introducing him into a game, giving him 40 minutes, giving him 50 minutes. He has an extra yard in 1B. And again, this is not to be patronising to any team, but you can introduce Shane O'Donnell and Tony Kelly and these lads and manage them a lot better in 1B than you can in 1A. Because in 1A, you also have the thing hanging over your head is that you don't want to get relegated, that you want to kind of maintain your status. You maybe target a few games, do things go your way, don't go your way. And you're kind of week to week, you might be amending the plan a small bit. But with 1B, they'll tip along at 1B while we're all focusing on, you know, Tipperary playing Cork next week and, you know, Galway and Limerick and Kilkenny, whatever. Like, we'll be all focusing on that. Clare will be going about their business. They'll be getting, you know, the minutes they want into lads and then maybe trying out a few more players. Like, it's not so long ago, I think it was Brian Nolan's first year, they went up to Antrim. Okay, granted, Antrim had a bit more of a stronger outfit at the time and they lost up in Corrigan Park. But, like, I think what Brian Nolan is doing at the moment, obviously, is that, just, you know, we're going to go out there, we're going to beat every team. That's what their full intentions are. We'll have a few good games along the way. We'll get as many, I suppose, minutes into Tony Kelly and Shane O'Donnell as we can or as we want. But then also move on and be ready for championship. And I think they'll enter championship very fresh. So I think we can get as far as championship and people saying very little about Clare, but they might come exactly the way they want to into the Munster Championship, which I think could I suppose, they could prove to be a serious challenge for lots of teams. There certainly, I think, be a freshness about their game.
Mm. And crucially for them, Skell, the way the fixture computer had it, Dublin at home, Tony Kelly also banged in a goal in that game, and Antrim away from home, they wanted 4 points on the board to start things off with those two fixtures. They're already, it feels, in a fairly strong position to get promoted after two games.
Yeah, I agree with Murphy in the sense that I don't think promotion even nowadays is as big an issue as was in years previous. Like, if you asked me who won the league last year, I had to think for a moment. I had to think for a second, and I think I even could be wrong. This was a Cork. Did they win the league?
They did two legs of the treble scale. They didn't
Won the Cork match. Munster. Now go back to your previous and like, fuck, I'm clear who won the league. Actually, I don't know. I can't remember who won the league last year.
Clare won the league the year
before.
Clare.
So, but like, I don't know.
I just took the apologetic palm of the hand. Sorry about that.
Well, welcome to the crappy quiz on the hurling pod.
But my point being, right, is that the league doesn't hold the same kind of importance. Now, it's you know, in terms of hurling, it's one of three competitions that we try to win, right? But everything's about the championship. You know, in terms of the three, it's bottom of the list. Whether we like it or not, it's bottom of the list. Yeah. Great to win it. And every player said the same thing. Lovely to win it, but it's not that important, really. So I think Clare are damn happy. They don't have to sprint into every fixture right now and play every game with 12 starters and try only give limited minutes to new players because the it's a real war from minute one. That's not the case in 1B. You have time to blood new lads. You can allow them to make mistakes. You can give them two games in a row, you know, and not worry about a result being jeopardised. I mean that respectfully, you know. Whereas in 1A, it's a different kettle of fish. You've got to play 10, 11, 12 of your starters just to be competitive to try and get a win. You know, I'm looking at Galway now, for example, in the last two games, they've pledged, you know, I would say 9-10 real starters, put in their best youth, and we've come away with a minus score of, what, minus 12 or whatever. You know what I mean? Whatever we're on at the minute. So that just goes to show you have to sprint into action in 1A, but in 1B, there's an allowance there. And that's just the level. Clare had level, you know, they're not playing four teams out of Munster and two teams out of Leinster. You know, they're not playing six of the top, you could say, teams of the country. So it's very natural to say that they can say to themselves, we can manage our minutes, get the minutes in early. So I agree with the way they're doing it. Get Tony Kelly and Shane Donnell in early, get the minutes early, and then tail it off a little bit and get them back in again and kind of fluctuate a little bit, you know, rather than trying to race them into action at the tail end of a heavy campaign in 1A, rushing it, where the pace of the game has already got to a level that they can't get to yet. You know, whereas now they can kind of adapt into it easily.
Yeah.
The other game won be Dublin bounced back from that loss against Clare in the first week to beat Kildare, 219 to 10 points. Again, this is such a learning curve for Kildare. First time they played in the second flight in over 40 years. They'll go into Leinster for the first time in 22. So it just maybe emphasises what they achieved last season to get to this point. But Rona Hayes, both the goals for Dublin at Parnell Park. Donald Burke hit 11 points, 10 of them coming from place balls. And Dublin back now within contention again with one win from two, but they're going to need results against Antrim and against Wexford to make sure they're up towards the top. I think Dublin missed a big opportunity to get promoted last season, but I do take both your points that maybe even from Dublin's perspective, feeling their way into the year a little bit in 1B and then actually in Leinster beating Offaly, Wexford, Kildare is actually what's going to matter to Dublin.
Mm.
Their summer is far more important than what could have happened in the league last season.
Can I tell you a very random one about Dublin that is nothing really to do with hurling? I got my packing list, the baby packing list from the hospital from Hedgeo, John Henderton.
Oh, very nice.
I don't know the man. I was at a baby fair up in Dublin and walked in the door. I don't know, is the RDS?
Hold on. You're at a fucking baby fair.
Yeah. Oh, they're like they're. Yeah.
Did you go to this willingly or were you dragged there? Give me the right answer, Mark, please.
James. I didn't know these things existed until I saw it.
I worried for.
I knew nothing about buggies and prams and I couldn't. My head was spinning coming out of it. But when I walked in the door, I walked in and there was one lad like a foot ahead of everyone, and I was like, "That looks like John Heatherton. Is it actually him?" I just went over and I was like, "Well, John, how's it going anyway?" And sure, it's not his first rodeo anyway. It wasn't his first child. So he was like, "Do you have your packing list for the hospital?" And I was like, "Packing list?" And he was like, "Yeah, yeah. Give me your number there." And he sent me on about five pages of like, this is what you need in your bag. This is what she needs. This is the baby's bag. And I was like, hey, Joe, this is brilliant. I was like, great goal last year in the quarter. This is brilliant.
Oh, Jesus, brilliant.
There's a random bit of trivia now. I've been holding that all winter now.
I've never heard of a packing list. Yeah.
There you are. I was just delighted. I was like, Hedgeo gave me a packing list. There we are.
He's not just an in vogue bear around the square. He is a guy with a perfect parenting
advice. With a soft touch, you know.
There you are. Bear around the square. Like the ultimate bear in the square. And then also very caring and considerate at the same time.
he's very much a papa bear at the same time.
Yeah.
I will have to ask about Podge the calf because I had at least two people ask, will you ask Gael about that? We'll talk about the NFL in the members pod. So that is the good news. If you're ready to shout at me to go, oh, the Patriots are in the Super Bowl. Gael's going to go on about it for at least 20 minutes of the pod. We will hold it off till the members pod. But the games that happened then in Division 2 across the weekend, Laois beat Derry 25 points to 15. It wasn't quite the 6:30 they scored at Mayo the week before. Aaron Duffy got 15 points. Laois manager Tom Fitzgerald said afterwards he was disappointed with their performance. They have a break week coming up. They play Kerry next and then Westmeath. Kerry and Westmeath drew in Tralee today. It was Kerry 2-11, Westmeath 17 points. Tom Doyle, Ronan Walsh got goals for Kerry. Looked like they were in a strong position at that stage. Walsh then received a second yellow card for a tackle moments after he scored the goal. So Kerry played pretty much the entire second half with 14 men. And Westmeath could have actually snuck it at the end. Eamon Kinnean got a very late equaliser for them and they missed a shot where they went to work a shot right at the very end of the game. It was almost like a buzzer beater. Went just wide. So Kerry 2-11, Westmeath 1-17. And we had a draw in the other game in Division 2 where Mayo got the last 3 points in Ruislip and they drew against London, which is a good result for Mayo on the back of taking that scutcheon from Laois on week one. So it leaves Laois top on 4 points. Kerry have got three after their open two games. Meath have got a win from their first round. Westmeath have got 1 point. London have got 1 point. Mayo have got 1 point. And Derry prop up the table with two defeats from two. Right, before we wrap up the main pod, what is the crack with Podge the Calf, or have you lost contact with him?
Podge the Calf was a pedigree bull that was sold last year. He went to Clare.
Mm.
He went last April. This is old news, Will.
I know, but people ask me, so I have to ask on their behalf.
Yeah, I've had 9 more pedigree bulls since then. I'm going to Monaghan tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock. I have the trailer on the Jeep. I'm delivering a bull up to Monaghan at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Fair play. Because
my missus is worried that she's ready to, you know,
deliver
at any moment in time. So she says, you better go in the morning and get back here for, you know, mid-morning. So I'm under heavy instruction. So, Murph, you can take your packing list, right, and shove it up your hole.
I don't know
if you like to do at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Well, I was saying to Will during the week, you probably missed this because I know, like, you literally probably record this pod, we put it out, and you don't pay attention to anything after that because you have enough going on. But I said it to Will, I was like, I only have one baby in the house. And I was like, Scale is three. He has a fourth on the way. He's managing the farm. He's working at the same time. He's doing this. He's doing that. He's involved in teams. I was like, how in the name of Jesus do you do all this stuff? Like, and so there you are. You're getting up and going to Monaghan with a bull at 5 in the morning.
On a bank holiday Monday.
on a bank holiday Monday. But sure, it doesn't matter the scale. It doesn't matter.
You have to come back and then have to finish power washing the fucking pet and potentially the
At the risk
you'll be
of
you'll be in a neck brace here next week after falling off the chimney. You'd be like Mrs. Doyle washing the slates.
Don't bring me back Father Ted, please. We were
just saying, Mrs. Doyle was in a neck brace. But anyway.
Dare I ask the Godfather style question here? After you mentioned many times about being in a house full of women and being so happy with that, is this child likely to be a masculine child, or have you found out just yet?
This child is confirmed to be a masculine child.
Oh, fantastic.
Testosterone, thanks be to God. I just needed some assistance. I needed some help, right? Because it gets to a point where you just need something, just something to look at where you go, that's a man, he's got my back in future. Because there's only so much of Peppa Pig and Barbie. And you know, all that shit I can take, K-pop, I fucking hate. I hate those K-pop women, right? Okay. There's only so much I can take, really.
Well, you only have a few more years of actually power washing the footpaths yourself, because he'll be doing it then.
Yeah, yeah.
But he'll learn it. Those girls can get whatever they want off me. They can ask me for whatever, I'll give it to them. That's your man. He's going to earn it. The podcast will be set in the internet for years to come, and he can watch it back when he turns 6. He's got to earn his keep around the house.
Well, my congratulations to you in advance. I know how excited you have been about having a boy. Is that the end of the story for the Skehill family now? Does this mean you go for a little operation after this, or have you decided?
So it was funny. So we went for the, what's the scan called? I think it's called the anomaly scan. I think I could be wrong. If any female listens to this now, they can correct me.
By the way, we have a load of female listeners. I was in Tipperary before Christmas, and the majority of people who came over and went, I listened to the pod, were all women.
Nice.
Jesus.
Yeah. Great. Great.
Fair play.
Yeah.
And mostly for the content, not for the looks. So
100%. They'll be in the comments. Throw a comment on the Spotify, throw it on the YouTube. They'll explain all. So what do you want them to tell you? This is a collective experience.
I think it was the phrasing was the anomaly scan where you can actually tell the sex of the child.
Okay.
After 20 or 20 odd weeks, I think. So we went for that, and I was a nervous wreck, if you asked. I was a nervous wreck. So,
you was nailed on that you wanted a boy, was it?
Oh, I needed a boy. I needed a boy. Right. Okay. So I said, I needed a boy. So, anyways, went through it all. Got to the scan, and the lovely lady, she put down on a piece of paper what the sex of the child was, put it in an envelope, handed it to Grace, and said, best luck, right? Open that in your own time. So, as we're walking out, Grace goes, if this is a boy, she goes, you're walking down the corridor, you're taking a lift, and you're getting a procedure from there. And I was like, how do you know this is it? And she goes, I've searched this, because if it's a boy, the shop is closed. So I said, we hop in the car, she opens it up, and she goes, thanks be to God, boy. And I went, yes. And she goes, you're going back up that corridor, and you're getting this job done. And I don't, have you heard about injury I got during the year? So with the
guys, I did. Yeah, well, sure. We talked about this. Was this pre-Electric Picnic, going to say, where this happened to you? Or was it earlier in the year?
Oh, it was. It was around that. Yeah. You were laid up.
Yeah. So I do not want anyone to go back in that region again. So I'm like, please, Grace.
Oh.
She says, no. You're gone, son. You're gone. So, yeah. Look, and obviously, Murph, you've witnessed your better half giving birth. So it's a small price to pay to go in and do that little procedure. She's done it 4 times for me, so I will happily, not happily, I will voluntarily walk in and get the procedure done. Under protest.
I am mildly disappointed there was no gender reveal party in Capitagal. Like, we saw lads betting on which square of the pitch a sheep was going to shit on when we were there. Murph was being asked to throw stuff over a crossbar. I was sure that you were going to have a gender reveal where you to hit a slitter at a balloon and it would go either pink or blue.
Not my style, though. You know, I just want to know. I can't hack this bullshit. Black or white. Just fucking tell me now. Which is it? And we get on with it, okay? So she opened her glove. Done. Right. Next. That's it. Next.
Power wash. Next.
That's how I do it, Murph. I don't be dilly-dallying.
I wouldn't doubt you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm ready for the boy. Fabulous. We have ours at home.
You have the birth at home. Well, yeah. You didn't know. Yeah. Gee, yeah, that's why.
It's what Grace wants.
Okay.
So we have this kind of, she's going doing it in this pool thing. It's a pool. So what's it called? It's like a fucking inflatable.
It's like a little inflatable pool that you'd have in the hot weather in the summer. Yeah.
Yeah, but I will say, I don't mean to be, of course, any female listeners, please forgive me. You know my style by now, right? I'm an experienced farmer in terms of calving. So I'm pretty calm in these things, okay? I've seen my fair share of stuff that I can, you know, not panic. And know when we're in trouble and when we're not in trouble. So It's all good.
I seem to remember a pod that we did about a year ago that we had to push back to Monday because you were in like an 11-hour calving session, I think, on a Sunday night.
Yeah. Like the Pats, when they won the AFC Championship game, I got up and straight down, we had to do a calving.
So you missed it?
No, the game just finished, right?
Right.
It was probably 11:45 at night. Hop into bed, I said, I better check the camera now just to see, is that lady about to calf? Looked down, saw the tail up, I went, shit, up again. And it was 6:00, getting back into bed. Real hair calving.
Oh.
So yeah, that was the fun of it.
And so the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, there's just calves dropping like left, right, and centre. And there's, I don't know what, the way it's going on now, I'll have fucking more children than I will have cattle.
That tees up the members pod very, very nicely indeed. And James Gale has his contract negotiations about the Hurling pod during the week. So I hope this isn't the last podcast we have with Gale.
Yeah, but I'm a heavy man in contract negotiations.
I'm
a heavy, heavy man. You see what I have to pay for it.
Right. So what happens is, if you're seamlessly replaced next week and we make no reference to you whatsoever, people know what happens when you went into that meeting during the week.
Yeah. I'm either sacked or dead.
Exactly. Sure. Oh, look, it's former Clare hurler Podge Collins. Welcome along to the Hurling Pod. You've always been a member.
Yeah.
All right. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. It's been good to catch up. We'll be back with the members pod as well tomorrow. Thanks a lot, Paul Murphy.
Thanks very much, lads.
James Gale, best of luck with what's going to be a pretty busy week and a trip up to Monaghan in the morning.
God bless.
Go on, we'll talk to you soon.
The Hurling Pod.
On Off the Ball.
With Apple Green. Making every journey better.